Does God want a separation of church and state? Should Christians be voting biblical principles? Does it really matter who you vote for? Join Pastor Jerry Cook as he endeavors to answer these and many other questions over the next hour on Politics in the Pulpit. And now, Pastor Jerry Cook. Hey, welcome to Politics in the Pulpit. I'm Joe Messina, in for Jerry Cook today, and he keeps calling me the Italian Stallion. I like to refer to myself more as the Italian Mule. I think it fits much better. And Jerry's out having a good time, as well as he should. You know, I'm hoping it's an hour of biblical sanity. We'll see. Later in the hour, we've got Alexander Haberbusch coming on with me. He's with Lex Rex Institute in Long Beach. And the institute is committed, if you would, it's committed to making sure our republic stands strong, sticks with the Constitution, and frankly, making sure that we know what the Constitution is, because so many today don't. Do we have a number to call in? No? Okay, never mind. That's all right. Always a pleasure to have you with me. You're listening on your hometown station, and, you know, as many of you know, I am on a school board here in the Valley. Now, today's show isn't about the school board. Today's show isn't about me being on the school board and that kind of stuff. But it's a question that comes up often for me, or to me, if you would. So, as I said, I'm on a school board here in the Valley, actually one of the larger districts in the state. And I'm also an outspoken Christian. You know, I believe in Christ. I believe in Scripture. You know, there's over 70, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's over 70 houses of worship in this town. And that includes, you know, congregants, anywhere from 30 or 40, all the way up to thousands. You know, many of the pastors I've spoke to in the town over the years say that they're only called to teach the gospel. They're only called to teach the good news. You know, but I'd like them to tune in and listen to this. Jesus told his disciples to teach what he taught, to make disciples of all that he went out and spoke with. But it wasn't just that. It wasn't just the gospel, as you know, as Scripture, as the word, as being religious, if you would. Not a word that I particularly care for. But teaching about marriage, teaching about money, teaching about life, how to take care of others. I mean, it was so much more to it than just salvation. And I fear that some Christians have forgotten that. They have forgotten truly what they're called to do. So you are to impart the knowledge that you have, the knowledge you got through the word, what you've been taught, to others. You know, do you let your kids do whatever they want to do because it makes them happy? Or do you guide them? Do you regulate them? Even deny things to your children because you know it's good for them or bad for them for that reason. You know, and we want to do so much for our kids. We want to be, I talk about this on my show all the time. We want our kids to be happy. We want them to succeed. We want them to do better in life. It's up to us to lay those things down for them, lay down the foundations, so that when they're out there doing their thing, doing what they're supposed to be doing, or sometimes what they're not supposed to be doing, you want to make sure that they know they can reach back out to you, that you've laid a foundation for them to allow them to make mistakes they need to make, that your voice is in the back of their head saying, whoa, think about this, think about where you're going and what you're doing. Because I know the mantra today, when you start looking at some of the responses to some of the things going on today, we're actually told that our kids know better. I'm trying to think of where does that really take place? You're telling me that young kids know better than you with the years of experience that you have as to how to do certain things in life? And there are some things that your kids can do at home with you. I'll get to the bottom line here in a second, but there's some things that your kids can do in and around you to where if they make a mistake, they're better off making it with you than out in the real world, where it could cost them a lot of money, where it could cost them a lot of trouble, may even cost them their freedom. And that's why I'm constantly telling people, don't fall for the political correctness of the day. Don't go along to get along, or don't go along just because you don't want to be chastised for taking a different stance than some other parents might be. I see it at the school district level. I see what goes on with some of these kids. I see how involved or non-involved parents are with some of these kids. So again, I just want to get back to, people have said to me, you know, hey, How do you separate your Christianity from being a school board member? And I'm willing to admit to you, you can't. It's impossible. You can't separate, or a true Christian can't separate his Christianity, his or her Christianity, from being a school board member or a city council person or an assembly member, whatever it is, any more than you can separate wet from water. It's just not going to happen. And in all reality, a true Christian who runs for office should not be running for office for their own gratification so they could be held in high esteem. If you're running for school board, in my mind, we'll stick with that because that's what I've run for and won, you're doing it to glorify God ultimately. Now, that doesn't mean that I stand up at the dais every time I get up there and start screaming, praise Jesus, right? Reading scripture, doing all kinds of crazy stuff like that. That's not what I'm called to do. It's not what any of us are really called to do. Because the Bible says they'll know us by our actions. They'll know us by our love for each other. They'll know us by how we treat people and what we do. Now, the problem with that is that, you know, you hear all these phobias today, right? You're transphobic, you're homophobic, you're broccoliphobic, whatever you happen to be for the moment. And it's, again, it's a twisting of the words. I'm not afraid of anybody or anything, frankly. I'm not, if I don't agree with transgenderism, it doesn't mean I'm transphobic. You know, it's amazing. And we've allowed them to get under our skin. We've allowed them to have us back off. Well, I would say to you as a Christian legislator, as a Christian policymaker, as an elected official, you don't have to do that. I pray before I go into the meetings. I ask for guidance. I want to know what it is that I should be voting on, not be voting on. I ask God to let me hear what's being said and direct and guide me so I know what direction to go in. Okay, I don't sit there and pound the Bible on the table. I've been there 14 years. I just remember when I first got elected. The concern was, oh, the guy that runs the prayer breakfast is going to bring prayer back to school. Well, you know the old joke, this prayer going on in school, whether you like it or not. Right? Just bring up your, mid-semester test. Watch how much prayer is going on. But there is prayer going on in school. There's nothing wrong with that. Would I force somebody to say a prayer? Of course I wouldn't. Not there. I sure as heck don't want state-sanctioned prayer. Can you imagine in our state, Governor Newsom would probably write a prayer that glorified him, that asked him for your freedom and so forth. But that's not what we're, again, that's not what we're called to do. Many of you like to come to the board meetings, not just mine, but others, and tell us how our founding fathers wanted nothing to do with God. They wanted nothing to do with religion. They weren't even religious people for that matter. Yeah, I have to say, really? Have you really studied what the founding fathers wanted? Now, Governor Morris, he was one of the people who wrote the Constitution or had part of the Constitution. He was also a signer of the Constitution. He went on to say, for avoiding the extremes of despotism and anarchy, the only ground of hope must be on the morals of the people. He said, I believe that religion is the only solid base of morals, and that morals are the only possible support of free government. Therefore, education should teach the precepts of religion and the duties of man towards God. I've always said the same thing. If you are the highest power source or entity in your chain of life, then it's all about you. You decide what's right or wrong. That doesn't sound very good to me. Benjamin Franklin went on to say, a Bible, a newspaper in every house, and a good school in every district. Wow, think about that. Right? The Bible was where we were supposed to get our moral values. The newspaper was supposed to be, or our news sources, were supposed to be where you could find out information as to what was going on in your town, your county, whatever, so you could keep up on the local information. And a good school because you want your kids taught properly. You want your kids to be educated. You want your kids to be able to read that newspaper and understand that newspaper. All studied and appreciated, he went on to say, as they merit. They are the principal support of virtue, morality, and civil liberty. So if you see that going away today, make your own conclusion. Who do we blame it on? To my Christian friends that are listening today, who say, hey, let's knock it off, Joe. You're making it uncomfortable. We're not supposed to have anything to do with politics. I'd say, really? What Bible are you reading? My Bible says in Exodus 18:21, moreover, you shall select from all the people able men such as fear God, or that's reverence / love God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such over them to be rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. We're supposed to go seek men and women that love God. We're supposed to seek those, put them in authority over ourselves. God gives us the ability to rule ourselves, but give us authority to rule over ourselves. But not just with anybody. Look at what's going on here in California. You know, I don't know how Jerry would say it, but I'll just say it plain and simple. You now have the right to murder your children outside the womb. You have the right to kidnap kids from other states, bring them here for surgeries that their parents are against. You know, this whole thing with transgenderism now, you want to look at detransitioning, but you have a hard time finding it. Why? Because it's being squelched. Don't make those mistakes with your kids that have been made in the past. Make sure they truly get the information they need. Make sure you truly get the information you need. And don't go looking for the information that's going to affirm what you want for your child. Go looking for the total, all the information you can get before you help make these decisions. The problem in the state of California is that you don't have that right anymore. The state will tell you what your child can have and not have, what you're allowed to do or not do. If you go into Proverbs in the Bible, 29:2, it says, when the godly are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked are in power, they groan. Well, that would depend on your perspective now, wouldn't it? Because if you think the state should move in a more liberal way, we're too conservative. Well, I don't know how you'd think that, but too conservative. Then you're groaning, right? And if it's the other way around, we're groaning because we think it's way too liberal. But if you use biblical principle, it's a whole different animal. Right? But I am called to protect your kids, or our kids, if you would. Right? We are called to obey the law as Christians, as long as the law doesn't go against God's word. Our kids should be educated in truth. Not in what's perceived truth, not in somebody's ideology or what somebody thinks they want as truth. I'm not going to go through all of that 1619 stuff today. I'm sure Jerry's touched on it. Our kids, should see everyone as equal. Not equality, not equity, not all of that, equal. We're all equal. We all should be helping each other out. We all should be working to the same end of getting a good education, being safe at school or feeling like you're safe at school. Our kids shouldn't be afraid. They should know that they're loved. They should know that there's people out there trying to protect them. What we're telling them today in most cases, or what they're reading or what they're seeing on their smartphone, is how much a certain group of people hate them because of their color. How much another group, you know, you've got moms demanding action in California today, rising up for tougher gun laws. We have got the toughest gun laws in the country in the state of California. Yet, we've got the highest rate of shooting, especially school shooting. What? Why? You can't keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. You're getting the result you don't want. Isn't it time to step back and think? Step back and look at other states. Step back and look at what's going on in other places. It's easy to scream. It sounds so cool, doesn't it? Oh, yeah, we've got to ban all guns. We've got to put up metal detectors. We've got to do this. It sounds great, but it's not a reality. So how do you keep the kids safe? How do you keep the kids safe at school? What kind of things do you put in place to make it happen? Because screaming that we need tougher gun laws hasn't worked. Hasn't worked for decades. It's funny, I was talking about this the other day to a teen psychiatrist and saying, look, in the 60s and 70s, we didn't have the kind of shootings they had today. Matter of fact, some schools taught you gun safety. It was just part of an elective. And yet today, with all the gun laws you have, it's harder to get a gun today than it was in the 60s and 70s. With everything you've got going on today, your shootings are up in schools. Why? Did you ever just sit back and think why? Really think through all the points that we've had years gone by and why it keeps growing. Nobody wants to talk about mental health. I'm not going to do that today. Again, I don't have the time. But start thinking things through from a non-political, non-ideological point of view. What's going to work? Look at what's happening in other states. Look at what's happening in other countries, other schools, as to what they do with this. Get back to the point of keeping your kids safe. Keeping them safe mentally, physically. We have books, as do other schools. Other school districts. We have books in our libraries with graphic illustrations of kids having sex. Yeah, we do. Because somebody thought that was an okay thing to do. Somebody thought that this will help kids get through their adolescence or teen years. Who? Why? Right? We're giving our kids misinformation demanded by the state when it comes to history and government and so on. Why? Who thought that was a good idea? Look at our rankings countrywide and planet-wide as to education from this state. I mean, seriously, people. You know, I've talked about alternative forms of education and people start screaming, you hate public education. No, I don't. But see, these kids are your kids. They didn't ask to be brought into this world. You brought them into the world. You need to pay attention to what they're learning at school. You need to push back on what they're learning if you're not in for it. If you believe it's wrong, if you believe it's bad, you need to push back on them. Or push back on the school, I'm sorry. You need to be talking to your kids. Kerry Quashen, who's here every week, does a show here on the station. You need to talk with him. Parents are spending almost no time with their kids anymore. How do you know what's going on at school? How do you know what they're learning, what they're seeing, what's in the books that they're bringing home? Are you looking at them? I'd say no. I mean, I realize we're all busy. I realize we're all doing work. We've got something going on. But again, as I said, the kids didn't ask for you. You brought them into the world. You're going to hear some people when they run for office, they say, well, you know, I do this, this, and this to protect your kids. Well, look, according to the FBI, the CDC, and all those other names, you can't. It's a lie. We can't keep your kids protected 100% of the time. See, we would have to get it right 100% of the time, or we're a shooter, or somebody wants to hurt your kids. Only has to get it right once. One time. You look at the fentanyl issues going on in the state, and the state's doing virtually nothing to fix it. Virtually nothing to put a stop to it. Again, back to the books in the libraries. You can stop that. You can make a difference. I'm not suggesting you go into the library, find every book that you find offensive. But when you see those, when you look at them, when you see there's something in there that you don't like or you think is wrong to teach your seven-year-old, your seventh grader, I'm sorry, and you can't get a change at the school level, you need to think about alternate forms of education. Your kids are your responsibility. So if you find you can't, and don't come to a board meeting once or twice and think you're going to make changes. This has been going on for decades. You guys are going to have to come to several meetings. There's 5, 6 different school boards in this town. You have to come to several meetings and make sure that you are just keep chipping away at the changes you want to see in education. Like I said, they're your kids. So if you can't get the changes you don't like, what's going on with your child in school, what they're teaching, and you feel like you can't make those changes, I think personally, then it's up to you. You either pull the child from the school, you get him in a different school, you get him with the people that you know are going to teach him properly. This is your job. This is up to you. Now, I know some people get anxious and nervous. I mean, I'm in the public school system, if you would. But I'm not in it to protect the public school system. I'm in it to protect your children. I'm in it to make sure your kids, our students, get the proper education they need, that they're safe. Hey, I'm Joe Messina, your host. Always a pleasure to have you with me, filling in today for the one and only, thank God, Jerry Cook. We'll be back in a few minutes. We are back. Joe Messina, your host, filling in for Jerry Cook today. I'll say much better looking and a little taller. And I don't know if that gives me a leg up or not, but always appreciate your time with me. I really do. And so does Jerry. You know he does. You can catch him every Wednesday here on your hometown station from 2 to 3 o'clock. And I'll tell you what, whether you're a believer or a non-believer, whether you believe in what he says or not what he says, you should tune in. You might learn something. You can give a call. You can. He's always up for a robust conversation, I'll put it, or a spirited conversation, if you would. I'm honored to be joined by Alexander Haberbusch. He is with the Lex Rex Institute in Long Beach. Alexander, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. Glad to join you today.
Hey, before we get rolling, because I forget to do this all the time, why don't you tell people what the Lex Rex Institution is all about and how they can help?
Yeah, so we're an organization dedicated to constitutional advocacy and government accountability. Lex Rex, our name is Latin for the law is king, and that's pretty much our philosophy. We want to hold all of our elected officials subject to the law, so that that remains our authority and not whatever our officials tell us is the case.
Do we actually still adhere to the law? I mean, I was...
Yeah, we're trying to make sure we do.
You know, you look at the Trump indictment as of yesterday, and I almost got the feeling, if you want to think back to it, I almost got the feeling in the beginning of our country where the Brits used to be able to go into a home basically with a blank warrant and go looking for something, and once they found it, they could fill it in. It's kind of like that now. They really haven't found anything, and they're given almost, what, 6 months, 8 months to go looking for something, are they not? Or am I wrong?
Well, and that's they called that a general warrant back in the day, and that's exactly what our Constitution or our Bill of Rights prohibits. I wouldn't compare this situation so much to a general warrant, although I think that the Justice Department has been doing a lot of that, in particular in investigating some of the attorneys that were related to Trump's post-election challenges. But here, I think they've had their time to investigate Trump over the past months and years even, and the best they've turned up is this charge for, what do they call it? Charge for...
His business, right? Falsifying business records or something along those lines.
In the first degree, falsifying business records in the first degree, which is a crime that's pretty unique to New York. You actually look up what that law is, and there's not much to it here. It's basically, if a person is guilty of making false records with an intent to defraud by making or causing a false entry in the business records of an enterprise. And then to ratchet up to the first degree, that adds on to it that they had intent to defraud and intent to commit another crime as a result of using this, concealing these documents. Not exactly what I think most of us thought he was going to be charged with.
Well, some of us who are ignorant to how the law works, I mean, I'm hearing that the statute of limitations has dried up on a bunch of these, maybe even all of them. I mean, how could the judge even entertain speaking to them or allowing them to be brought forth?
Well, I don't know if any motion has been brought to exclude these based on a statute of limitations at this point. He may not. Most of the time judges aren't going to raise things what's called sua sponte. That means on their own. The other party has to move for the judge to recognize something. And obviously, this is all very, very fresh. These charges just came out yesterday. I don't know if any kind of defensive motion has been filed yet, but I expect to see one in the coming days.
Now, my understanding, too, is that there really aren't 34 charges. I mean, some attorneys say there's a total of like three. Some are saying up to 11, but apparently they're trying to break out kind of the same.
Yeah.
Explain that, because a lot of people
don't... Well, to me, it looks like one charge. They're all for this Section 175.10, falsifying business records, 36 of essentially identical language. The only part that differs is the very last section of the description where they refer to the entry of the ledger number or of the check number that was issued. And that's because, I guess, Trump is alleged to have made multiple payments to his attorney, which were then conveyed to this shell company and then conveyed to Stormy Daniels, or I guess some of it conveyed to Stormy Daniels, others went to payments to the middlemen, I guess, is what's being alleged here. But they're charging each of these instances separately. So every time a payment was made, they're adding a separate charge because a separate ledger entry was made for that payment.
Does that sound right in any way?
Well, they can charge it however they want. I'm surprised they didn't do 150 charges, one for each dollar spent. But there's an argument for it. I think it's, frankly, this whole thing to me smacks of an attempt to get Donald Trump and what they see as some of his shady past dealings back into a public spotlight, and they're going to use whatever legal mechanism they can to do that, even if it's one that's maybe a loose fit at best. I guess they haven't seen how little that's worked out, but they're going to try it again.
I think this is terrible. I think it's amazing that it's so obvious, and even some hardcore Democrats, old-time Democrats, Barney Frank and alike are coming out saying, stop this, don't do this. All you're going to do is turn this guy, you're going to give him the presidency for all intents and purposes at this point. This
right.
is just not good. And I think the American people, even if you're not leaning, but you're actually pretty far left, I think they're looking at it and saying, hey, this is not the way to win.
No, well, and it's very rare for these sorts of crimes to be charged against defendants. Usually the reason these crimes are not generally charged is they're expensive to investigate, and there's not a great deal of public interest in prosecuting things like these charges. The reason they're being charged here is because presumably the public interest is in stopping a high-profile figure from having a public platform, which it's not going to do. But look at the expense involved. It's obviously much, much greater when talking about a presidential candidate or a past president. The Secret Service detail has to come with him everywhere he goes. And I don't think this eventuality is seriously contemplated by anybody, but if Trump were to be convicted under these laws, that Secret Service detail doesn't go away in prison. It becomes much more expensive at this point. So I think it's really not a serious effort to enforce the law.
It's totally political. I'll go down that road. I have no problem doing that.
Yeah.
Just saying to myself, look, when you look at what's going on with the Obama family, with the Clintons, with the Biden family, and nothing, absolutely nothing. All right, sat on a laptop for 2 years. Even now, we can go through the whole political side and say nothing. Not one thing has gone in front of a grand jury, really. So it's kind of hard to believe that they really care about the law, and especially in New York City, where crime is up over 350%. He's knocked down over 50% of the felonies down to misdemeanors. It's hard to take them seriously, right?
Well, it is. And the part of these charges that I find particularly strange, maybe you can help me out here, but an important element, in fact, the intent element of this crime that he's charged with is with an intent to defraud. Well, I looked in my Black's Law Dictionary. Defraud is defined as to cause injury or loss to a person. And then it says see fraud. And I looked at fraud, and fraud says a knowing misrepresentation of the truth or concealment of material fact to induce another to act to his or her detriment. So you can see both of those say they have to cause somebody else to act in their own detriment. It has to cause an injury to somebody else. Yet even if all of the factual allegations made against President Trump are true here, even if it does turn out to be true that he made these payments, that he tried to hide these payments, so on and so forth, who exactly was this done to harm? I'm not sure who he was inducing to act to their own detriment. I don't even know who he's alleged to have acted to have induced to act to their own detriment. There don't appear to be any facts in there about that. So, just on its face, it appears to be a legally defective complaint against the president. But I guess that's not what matters anymore.
No. Well, it's again. I play a lawyer on my nighttime talk show, but I hear enough. I bring enough people on. You're down in Southern California,
Long Beach. Yep.
Yeah. I have Brad Dacus is on my show from quite often from Pacific Justice Institute.
Yeah, and Brad and I are good friends.
Yeah. So and we talk about some of the cases that he brings forward, and I'm saying to him, Brad, that's blatantly against the law. Why would they do that? Or why would the schools allow that, or in even the legislators? Because look,
because they can get away with it.
Bingo.
There are not. I mean, the fact that I know Brad, the fact that there's a handful of us who are actually bringing these lawsuits against the government is why they can get away with it.
Yeah.
We're doing our part to hold them accountable, but we really need more people who are doing this. Problem is, there's not a lot of money in it.
No, but there is on the other side, and
yep.
I remember an event I went to, I think it was last year, with Charlie Kirk and a few others, and Charlie said, look, they've been fighting us in courts for decades. This is where they get their wins. We've done nothing in the courts.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And now that's where the fight needs to take place. It needs to take place in the court. We need to use the law I've got a joke. What I always say is that, we've been playing by the Marcus of Queensbury rules. They've been using guerrilla warfare for decades. It's
uh-huh.
time for us to stop that. Take the gloves off. If we really care about protecting the republic, if we really care about protecting our children and holding up the rule of law, we need to do it in the courts, just like they do. And you're right.
Completely
not
agree.
A lot of money there.
I mean, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. So,
yeah, well, no, I love organizations.
If I saw
like
somebody
yours,
else doing it, I wouldn't be doing it. It's like you see those. If you have a chainsaw, you might have looked at it and it has a warning that says, "Do not attempt to stop blade with hands." And you think, "Gee, that sure is stupid." I bet some lawyer made them put that there.
Yeah.
Well, the reason a lawyer made them put that there is because they want to make sure that they're warning the public even against things that nobody's ever going to do, because they know there's an army of other lawyers on the other side waiting out there to sue them if they get the slightest little thing wrong or somebody does hurt themselves with a product. I want that for our Constitution. You know, I want that army of lawyers that make all of our elected officials and bureaucrats tremble in their boots at the slightest misstep because they might get sued over it. Right now we don't have that, but, you know, I think we're working toward it, and I think we're doing a lot better than we were even a year ago.
Oh, so I've been, you know, associated with Brad and having him on the show for almost 15 years now, and I can tell you I've seen the lawsuits, you know, switching. I've seen how much more work they're doing. I think he's up to, what, 20? When he started with me, he had 3 or 4 offices. He's up to over 20 right now.
Yep.
And the stuff that they're fighting, I'm talking about, you know, pastors that have been thrown in jail for simply showing up at an event with a Bible in their hand. And I mean literally just showing up at an event with a Bible in their hand.
Yes.
You know, and now you've got the transgender community or whatever going to these schools, and he's working on a few right now that I know of where this is being kept from the parents, all the information,
yeah.
The health information.
Well, we've got one in active litigation right now. It's for Los Alamitos Unified School District, which, if you don't know the area, it's a fairly conservative area within Orange County, where fifth-grade girls every year are sent to, or I guess the whole fifth-grade class every year is sent to what they call an outdoor science camp. Well, in 2022, the school, without telling the parents, decided to switch this camp to basically an LGBTQ propaganda retreat, and then have the parents all sign these waivers without telling them a word about it, and then sent 10-year-old girls off to a camp where they learned about they-them pronouns and where they were, of course, spending the night. So, you know, one of these little girls asks her counselor, are you a boy or a girl? Because she wants to know whether or not the counselor is going to be spending the night in her dormitory is a boy or a girl. And the counselor says, well, I prefer they-them pronouns. You know, zero parental involvement. Parents were not informed of this. Kids were not able to call home. But this kind of thing is not unique. You know, this happens all across the country, but we are fighting back against it.
Well, you know what? But we need to be, personal opinion, okay? And you're the lawyer, so you can tell me I'm whacked, but we need to be more aggressive with it. And when I say that,
yeah.
I mean, look, there you got a situation where a kid wants to call home, wants to get a hold of their parents. They won't allow them. They kind of got them locked down. I'd be, you know, if I was that kid's parent, I'd be grabbing you Monday morning and say, we're going to suit. They kidnapped my child. They wouldn't, I don't care what it is. I want it to cost them something. I want them in the news.
Yeah.
I want them embarrassed by this.
And well, here's the thing. You call most for-profit lawyers up, tell them the situation that I just told you. They're going to say, oh, sue the camp. Don't bother to sue the school. They have all kinds of government immunity. You can sue the camp. You'll probably get something out of them. Well, we're not interested in that.
That's,
you know,
right.
We did name the camp as one of the defendants on our lawsuit, but that's just so the school can't point at them and say, look, it's not our fault. It's their fault instead. No, we blame the school. They're the ones that failed to inform parents. They're the ones that, as far as the evidence appears to suggest, knew about this ahead of time, didn't say anything about what was going to be going on. They're the ones that ought to be held accountable, and they're the ones that ought to feel the effects of what they've done. This camp's a private institution.
Yeah.
They can do what they want. If parents want to send their kids to this kind of camp, you know, I say they have the freedom to do that, but certainly not without their information or consent.
No, it's again, I find it's just irritating as heck, because my attitude, again, is to say, look, get everybody involved. That's what they do. They name everybody.
Yeah.
So name everybody in the suit, and then maybe somewhere down the road, whether it's a teacher, administrator, or the school, the camp, if you would, is going to stop and go, you know what? This costs us way too much money. Insurance companies may say, yeah, we're not going to insure your camp over the summer because you guys cost us too much money. We need to make it as painful for them as they do for us.
Yeah, but you got to be strategic with it, too, you know, because you have the same page limits whether or not you sue 5 people or you sue one. You want to bring cases that you can win,
right,
I think.
Right. Agreed. Yeah. But my point is that when you go to something like that, when something like that goes down, instead of just you want to name the camp because they have all the money. Oh, no. Name everybody involved in it.
Yeah,
get everybody
to
have.
Well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my my attitude.
And it's, you know, the traditional wisdom that lawyers will pass down is you generally don't want to sue government defendants because you have to comply with all these little minute rules to do it. You know, just to be able to sue them, you have to meet all these rules. There's all kinds of immunity that you have to deal with, whether it's immunity from suit for the employees or the fact that the institution can't make payments without authorization from other parties. You know, it's just a lot more complicated. It's a huge headache. Don't do it.
All right, you got to pause.
That's a really bad philosophy.
You got to go. We believe in capitalism around here. We got to go make some money. Go for a quick break. Be back in a few minutes. You're listening to Politics in the Pulpit with Joe Mussina. We'll be right back. We are back. Joe Mercini, your host, filling in for Jerry Cook, the man, the myth, the legend in his own mind, which is okay. You know, you gotta shoot for something. Anyway, I always appreciate your time. I know he does when you tune into his show. And I've got Alex Haberbusch on the line with me. He's with LexRex Institute in Long Beach, California. And Alexander, thanks for being with me. I'm appreciating my time with you right now.
Yeah, thank you, Joe. I appreciate being here.
Okay, so you've decided that you've got a case you're working on that you've just won to go back to the old days where we're going to be using a slate tablet. And you've gone back to a tried and true process to count elections.
That's right. Paper
before.
Balloting and manual counting. It's the only way to run our elections.
You hate trees, don't you? And killing all
the... Yeah, that's it. You figured it out. No, I think these plastics and things are probably way worse for the environment if that's where we're going to go. But I think paper balloting is preferred because, just that. There's a paper trail. You can go back and you can look at something. You're not relying on some corporation to make up the rules for how your votes are going to be counted. People are never going to trust that, even if we do get it perfectly reliable, and we haven't.
No, and you know what? I was in the computer world for over 20 years, and when we started relying more and more on computers, I said, this is bad. This is dangerous. Once they connected with the Internet, even if they tell you they're not connected, this is dangerous. It's too easy to get in there. We brought up a fellow out of Florida who actually worked for the Democrat Party, still a staunch Democrat, but he said, look, when they hired me, and said, we want you to...
That wouldn't be Clint Curtis, would it?
Is that who it was?
It probably was. He's a friend of mine. He was involved up in Shasta County, too.
Yeah. Well, he when he started, he thought he was coming up with something to show them how to keep it from them from cheating. And in reality, it allowed them and showed them that you could easily cheat on those machines.
Yeah, that would have been Clint Curtis. He gave that presentation up in Shasta. It convinced them to switch away from from electronic voting. So I guess they found it convincing. I know I do. That's a huge victory, especially a victory coming out of California.
Yep.
And we want to get other counties to follow suit.
Yeah, but you're looking at, who is it, Dean Logan in Los Angeles County. I can't remember the state he was already throwing
out. Yeah, we got a lawsuit against him right now.
And he's got all kinds of issues in his past when it comes to this kind of thing. I know that the True to Vote people had a lawsuit against him as well to remove, was it 1.3 or 1.5 people off the voter rolls?
That was the Judicial Watch and the EIPCA, that was those two groups, right?
Yeah. And they had been working on that for years. Look at my daughter has left this state 12 years ago. She's a voter in another state. She has been. I get a ballot for her for every election. I just got a summons for her to go to jury duty, and I had to write them and say, look, you can't issue an arrest warrant. She doesn't live here, And so,
well, that was... I was a little bit involved in that Judicial Watch lawsuit a couple of years ago, and we were really optimistic about it at the time. Get these voter rolls cleaned up, you won't have the problem. And we did. They cleaned them up for one election, and then, lo and behold, the next year, everybody was back again. They didn't keep it clean. So we're not pushing for that anymore. Now what we're pushing for is 100% manual voting. Ultimately, you got to get voter ID into these polling centers as well. But I think step one is going to be paper balloting, manual counting. At least then it takes a lot more manpower if somebody does want to corrupt an election. They have to do it on a vote-by-vote basis. They can't just make an algorithm. They can't do the rest of it. I'm not saying that stuff happens. I don't know whether it does. Frankly, it's almost impossible to prove after the fact. The point is that electronic voting systems are vulnerable to tampering, and anybody who knows the systems will tell you that. So let's just get a system that's less vulnerable.
Well, anybody who knows computers will tell you that. I know that I used to man the desk and the Republican desk when they used to, on voting night and irregularities at the polls and what have you. One woman called almost in tears. She had been up in our area to vote. They told her she already voted. She said, I want to vote. That wasn't me. There's no way. And they told her the only way to prove it was to go down to Norwalk. They sent her all the way down to Norwalk. To do it down there, and Norwalk told her, we may or may not count it. It just,
gosh,
it's like, how do you feel good about it after that? And, you get to the paper ballots. Here's the thing I find really interesting about the paper ballots. They'll have an answer for us by midnight You know what I'm saying? 10, 11, 12 o'clock on voter day with paper ballots, and yet with computerized voting, we can't do it. Somehow we can't get it done for 3 days.
Right. I don't know the intricacies of why they can't get the job done, whether it's government workers who are, you know, not working as well as they could, or if there's something else going on. But, you know, it's funny because you hear all kinds of opposition to paper balloting and manual counting, and it usually is that it's going to take too long. I don't know if people just don't remember. You know, electronic voting is not that new. Everybody used to do manual counting, and we always had the results on election night.
Yep. Yeah, we did. And the variances over the next few days when they recheck something or, you know, decided to go with the provisionals, it wasn't that much of a change. It's actually, for some of us that are political junkies that are looking at this information, it's really weird because what you get the night of, or what you think you're coming into based on the voter numbers, seems to make no sense 2 days after the election.
Right.
You know, statistics don't make sense. They don't fall in line. They don't follow the normal rules, if you would, or the normal flow. And
right.
nobody wants to fess up that, we're making
Well, numbers. Of course not.
Yeah.
Right, and most of these voting machines, most of the machines used to count ballots, are made by private companies.
Right.
And you think if one of these private companies says, oh, our machines got hacked and tampered with, that anybody's going to keep buying from that company? Absolutely not.
No.
They have other interests besides electoral integrity, and whether or not those interests do end up influencing them to, you know, do things they shouldn't do, is a question that I don't think anybody knows for certain the answer to, but I don't know why we would want entities involved in our elections that have an interest in something like that. We want, you know, get corporations out of elections, get corporate control out of elections.
And money.
Have we the people count the ballots? You know, it's...
You're right on. It's kind of like what I keep going back to is the more you get into this, the more hands you get into this, the more money you got going down. I've got elected members of the legislature here in California telling me that they know that they're passing unconstitutional laws. They know, but they're banking on the fact that nobody's going to challenge it. To your point earlier, there's no money to challenge it, and people will just go along because they really don't have the time to do something about it. I just find it really interesting.
Well, I was involved a little bit on an election in Long Beach where we basically had a vote to make our 1% increase to the sales tax permanent, and it passed by, in the official count at least, it passed by, I think, 4 votes, and we wanted to have a recount. So we contacted Dean Logan, county registrar, asked him, you know, can we have a recount of these votes? He says, give me $275,000 for the recount. Whoa, why the heck does it cost that much? Well, a couple of years ago, we switched to an electronic balloting system where now, rather than Long Beach having its own elections, all the Long Beach ballots being together, people can cast their ballot anywhere in the county. They all get mixed together in one heap. So, you know, you got ballots from Santa Monica in there, ballots from Pasadena in there. And you have to sort out the Long Beach ones if you want to have a recount. And that's going to take a lot of man hours to do that.
Wow.
So, you know, for all the complaints that paper balloting requires more man hours, but what about when it comes to recounts, which by law require you to look at the paper trail?
Yeah. Alexander, we're out of time. I mean, I'm sure Gerald will have you back to finish up on that. If people want to get more information about your organization,
sure.
It's lexrex.org, right? Lex.
That's right. Yep. And we are a 501c3, so if you want to help us fight these battles, you can make a donation there.
Great. Been a pleasure. All right, people, you've been listening to Politics in the Pulpit. Jerry will be back with you next week, and you can tell him, don't forget to call him and tell him what a great job I did. Anyway.
Santa Clarita. It's 3 o'clock. Time for national news on KHTS.
You've been listening to Politics in the Pulpit with Pastor Jerry Cook. Join us every Wednesday at 2 p.m. right here on your hometown station, KHTS. You can also join Pastor Jerry every Sunday at Freedom's Way Baptist Church in Castaic. For more information, find us on the web at www.freedomswaybaptistchurch.com. That's www.freedomswaybaptistchurch.com or call us. 661-714-5650. That's 661-714-5650. Thanks for listening. God bless and have a blessed day.